Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Things done. Work for the holy.
Play studios here in Johnston proper.
Time to be alive, Ben.
What do you mean? What's feeling great?
I mean, just all around.
Oh.
I was just trying to hype up the crowd.
That was cheesy.
I wasn't.
That was real cheesy.
I mean, I wasn't excited as that. Huh? I can tell you that much.
Come on now.
All right. Well, okay. Here we got going on the show tonight. Big news. Chris Akers is in studio, and he's just released it's fresh cut. It's fresh off the cow.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Akers, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Is it too cheesy when you put out your greatest hits album to call it Akers of Hits?
Oh, man, you just stole the strategy.
It's
right
done
there.
Deal.
Yeah.
You guys, I'm going to consult you when I go to...
I got way more cheesy ideas than that. Yeah, come back anytime.
Yeah, that's just scratching the surface.
That's $50 for the first one.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay, so...
I can't afford you, man.
So, all right, so I'm excited because I've been spinning these tracks. And it's interesting because, like, when Chris is in here, we always get the acoustical flavorings, and we're gonna get some of that tonight, and I like that about him. But I mean, there's some hoppers on this album.
Tambourine, maybe.
And I tell you what I heard. Where did I hear, one of the tunes, Mike, I think it's on Nowhere Home. If you listen to it, listen, there's a point in the song where it sounds like Ben Folds harmony. Like Ben Folds always does harmony with himself,
yeah.
And it's kind of high register. And like I heard some of that action going on the Nowhere Home song.
It was a personal challenge to just see how high I could get by the end of the album, you know.
And you said this has to be done. I'm not leaving until this is finished.
I can't close the song until it's there. Yeah.
So we're gonna hear from Chris. He's gonna perform a couple tunes. We're gonna play a couple for you so you can hear some tracks from the album. And also, Boova, couple interesting interactions with Boova here. First of all, someone tried to entice Boova into a Christian flash mob.
Yep.
And we'll see what his response was to that. You guys can at home cast lots and see how you think Boova responded. And also there was a camera crew following Boova around this week. And, if you don't find those happenstances, I don't know who you are. So, we'll figure out what the terms of that. Mike, also, identifying who you are in the Book of Job with your children.
Yeah, I took a bold course and decided I was going to go through the Book of Job with the 6 and 9 year old ladies And we got to a point where we had to stop and decide who was representing us in the story. And it's probably exactly who you think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's a great time to be alive, Ben.
It's a great time to be alive. All right, good. So that's what's going on. So this week, hey, just remind you before we get going, if you have not had the chance, you knew I was going to follow back up with you. Make sure you go check out Many Hands for Haiti. Tim Brand was in here last week talking about the things that you can do to kind of be part of what they're up to. You can shop at some of the thrift shops. They have a catalog, and Samaritan's Purse does this too. I thought both were cool ideas, but like the catalog itself, you can say, you know, for $20, you can buy 6 chickens for somebody. You as opposed to just sending $20, you're putting it towards, buying a lamb or like, buying some leather for somebody to make shoes out of or whatever it is. You know exactly what it's going for and what those dollars do. You can give, I think, like $10,000 and build a hospital. You know, spread it out.
I always thought they'd get more action there if they'd send you the picture of the chickens.
Like send this one?
Yeah, so like, you know, I mean, it's a general fare when you go to a Christian concert or where there's at least 3 artists on the bill. One of them is going to say, hey, listen, we're sponsoring children today.
Yeah.
And then they have the pictures already ready to go, you know? But then they're like, hey, buy 6 cows. And you're like, well, what do they look like? I'd be interested to know. Like,
what are their names?
Yeah, are they well fed? Are they going to do a good job? I want to buy a chicken.
I am much more interested in the background of the children I'm sponsoring than the chickens I'm buying to be killed.
I'm just saying if you did like trading cards, people would get excited about
it. Hey, I'm going to pay $5 from my buddy Chester here.
I'm not
super excited to send him to Haiti.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying people would participate more if you're like, I got the 6 chicken card.
Like, I only have $3. Can I have the emaciated cow? That sounds wrong, Mike.
I've been saying, if you got
wrong.
If you got a card with 20 chickens on it that was a hologram.
Oh.
So you'd put it in a sleeve and show everybody.
This is a first edition 6 chicken.
Super chicken bonus. That's a mistake. That's a mistake.
I got more ideas.
No, hey, don't let them all go for free. Acres is on the ticket for 50 bones already.
I hear what you're saying. Tone it down. I'm with you.
All right, so let's do this. Let's hear a tune. Maybe play one for us, Chris Akers, and then we'll talk about the album, and then we'll play one off the album so they can get a taste of it.
Wonderful.
All right. So which one are you going
to
play for us?
Let's open with one of my favorites to play with the acoustic, called Waiting All My Life.
All right, this is Waiting All My Life. This is from Chris Akers' new album, Nowhere Home. You're listening to Live from the Path.
Come and whisper in my ear when I'm losing to the fear you're holding on. In the silences you speak, in the spaces in between the dead and the gone. Come erase the worst of me, turn the lock and lose the key to darker days. And I was clinging to the past, but it's gone and all that lasts is here to stay. 'Cause I've been waiting all my life for this feeling, love. And I've been running all my life from your healing, love. And I'm not worthy, but I can't help falling for this love you give. This is beautiful and true. This is nothing less than you within my heart. It's 30 years I've come to this, to the altar, to a kiss, to say I'm yours. Because I've been waiting all my life for this feeling, love. And I've been running all my life from your healing, love. And I'm not worthy, but I can't help falling for this love you give. Oh, oh. Because I've been waiting all my life for this feeling, love. And I've been running all my life from your healing, love. And I'm not worthy, but I can't help falling for this love. This love. Yeah, I've been waiting all my life for this feeling, love. And I've been running all my life from your healing, love. And I'm not worthy, but I can't help falling for this love you give. Oh, this love you give. Oh, this love you.
There we are. I love the dance moves in this studio.
Hey, man.
Man.
Can't but make it happen. You know? This is where the magic begins.
Oh, absolutely.
It starts in my waist and moves the way up. That's the magic.
It starts in my waist?
I'm going to look.
I think it should end there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should just be done with that.
That's the magic.
Move and look me in the eyes when I speak with you.
So that song sounds like it was ripped right out of a movie. I mean, it's soundtrack material.
Well, I was hoping you wouldn't catch that, but.
Oh. Hey, man.
Hey.
Supposed to keep that on the
download. Have you seen the Clint Eastwood classic Bridges of Madison County?
You know, actually, I haven't.
Yeah. Me neither. Congratulations, Dick.
This is the song where he's swimming.
You know, I never find myself listening, like, in my personal life, listening to, and this is not meant to be any way bad, but, like, boppy music. You know, like, that kind of stuff where you just kind of, you move to it. And I mean that, normally I would say, hey, man, that's kind of boppy. I don't know if I like that. But that was boppy, and I liked it.
Yeah.
Like, I was sitting here like, yeah, I'm sitting on this.
See, and I think it's as you grow, I don't know, it's as you grow older or something, like, you want something different out of your music, right? Like, when I was a little younger, I just wanted an excuse to be angry. You know what I'm saying? And then, like, I chose music that fit that style, you know? And I don't know whether, I mean, a lot has to do with coming to know Jesus and looking for some joy and stuff, you know? And then all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I can be happy and I like this song.
Are you saying that Acres just pulled me out of my teenage angst?
You're gone.
I did that with one song.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
I just went from wearing goth makeup all the time to now I like boppy music.
I saw this transformation that happened right away.
It all fell off. I appreciate it.
See, I was wondering when he was saying that, is it like, you know, is your musical taste getting better as you get older, or is it like your taste buds that die as they get older?
Now, if you notice, Acres, I didn't say anything either way there. But actually, as I do get older, I tend to appreciate songwriters more than I used to. Songs that tell a story or craft a moment or elicit a feeling or even like you know songs that make you smell a smell that's not there. You know what I'm saying? Like it pulls it tells such a story that you pull the entire environment. And like there's people like you that can encapsulate songs like that. And like it blows me away. Like I can draw a very 2D picture if I was to sit down and write a tune. And then, like I said, people like you seem to be able to do like a full encompassing 3D view of the world when you write one, and it just blows me away that you can do that.
That's extremely kind of you. Thank you. Thanks, man.
It's a great time to be alive, Eggers.
It's a great time to be alive. So here's the deal: you can catch that tune on Chris's new album, Nowhere Home. It was out November 15th, where all great music is sold. I've been spinning it on Spotify. You can get it on SoundCloud. You can pick it up from his website. And go to chrisacresmusic.com. Now, tell me, this is your first, you've done some EPs, but this is your first full-length album, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. I wanted to, take a bold step and get that all recorded in one spot there. So, yeah.
There is, so compared to previous recorded efforts, how is this one different or maybe the same?
I think what was different is that I finally said, you know, I think I've reached the end of my abilities, mixing-wise, recording-wise. I should bring some other people into this. If I'm going to do a full album, I want to give it every chance it can have to be good. So I ended up pulling in a few other guys. I pulled in a guy that I met along the way named Brett Baird. He's mixed for a couple guys that I really respect, like King's Kaleidoscope and Citizens and Saints. And, it just came to that moment and I said, you know what? I'm not those guys, but why not? Why not at least ask if he's interested? I'm surprised he went for it. So we got to have a fun little.
You know, that does say something that they let you in the door. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It does have something to say because there's a lot of places where we run into this a lot when we're trying to get guests for the show. You know, where they open the door, they look at you and they go, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
No. In fact, I need to check with my email filter because I'm not sure how this happened.
How did you get in here?
So that is pretty cool. So the album process, did it take, I don't know, I'm always interested on how this goes. It's like, do they produce it and then they let you hear it and then you go, there's something I want to change here, or no, that's top shelf. We're done here. Is there a lot of volleying going on?
Well, that was what was so fun about this whole process was that it was a huge learning process for me. I got to figure out what exactly it was that he did. I invited him in as a mixing engineer and said, hey, if you want, because you have so much more experience than I do, I would love to get your ears on these songs. And if there are little productional changes you want to make, shoot them my way and we'll bounce that back and forth. So for each song, I would say there was a process of probably, 3 to 5 bounces back and forth where I would send him the raw tracks. He would mix it down plus maybe a little productional change he wanted to make. Like, hey, let's not put this kick drum here. Let's put it over here.
Right.
Let's hold this piano off until verse 2 to build the dynamics. And so that was kind of how he stepped in and just aided me in telling a better story with these songs.
Sure.
So it was an invaluable relationship I got to have there.
Did he come back with anything that, I mean, it was crazy? Like, I'm going to hit a goose with a mallet, and we're going to do it in verse 2. Or was everything like, I mean, like, did he throw a harmonica in somewhere? Like, we could really use a harmonica here.
On Eden, which is the third track on the album, he really helped enhance the big instrumental explosion that happens, you know, like 8 bars in or something like that, just by adding simple things like tambourine.
Mm-hmm.
He is really good, and he has a really, really talented folk duo with his wife, and they're called Handsome and Gretel. And so he was bringing a really, really good. He's handsome, and her name literally is Gretel.
Really enjoys that.
I love that way too much.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I heard that. I'm like, yeah, buddy.
No, I mean, if you can get him on here, that'd be. They are fantastic. But so he's got a really good feel for organic music, and mm-hmm. I think that's what he helped breathe even into some of these more kind of electronic style or orchestrations I was pulling out. He still breathed a lot of human element and. Elements into it, so it was a really cool thing.
It is cool to have producers like that, where I know what I'm capable of producing, right? And letting someone else take it and make it into something or add to it, and you're like, I would have never thought of that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's when you find people that you can work with like that, where you go, that is so out of left field and out of my ability to even come up with. I'm very thankful for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's amazing that you can find people to do that. That's very cool.
It was incredible. Yeah, I was super thankful.
So tell me a little bit about the song The Beauty.
The Beauty is my favorite track on the album. It is the culmination. If there is a light story that's woven through, it is the journey of a person leaving his home, asking the question, what is home? What does that even mean? And then he or she or whoever ends up kind of realizing the answer to that question in the final song. And for me, that answer was home is not, it's that old adage, home is where the heart is.
Right.
But kind of, I still had to realize that for myself. So it is the home is wherever my friends are, wherever the people that I love are, wherever my mission and my calling is, that's home. It's not a place. And so to have this track end it was really powerful. I got to bring my wife in. She has an incredible voice, and having her on this really, really drove that point home, I thought.
Cool. Well, let's give you just a little taste of The Beauty. This is from Nowhere Home by Chris Akers, and enjoy a little bit of this tune, and we'll be right back with you. Listening to The Beauty from Chris Akers on his most recent album, Nowhere Home. I like the I don't know, the kind of the vibe going on behind behind the words and everything. Like, it kind of, I don't know, puts you in a space.
That's what I'm saying. It feels like it out of a movie. And, like, here's the reason that that's a compliment, right? Like, it's, you ever put your headphones on when you're walking out of the Target or something and listen to a tune? And you're like, it's like, sounds like your life has a soundtrack, you know?
Yeah.
And your life just, it seems instantly cooler that you put a tune on, you know? And, like, that kind of song is like, it feels like it can encapsulate a moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, it can define a period. It can make a moment be something that is more memorable maybe than it even should have been. You know? And, like, once again, sounds like it's right out of a soundtrack.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Chris Eggers. Do you picture anything in your mind, like, when you're singing that song?
Absolutely. There is basically the imagery of what that song was coming out of. That song came out of a moment where early on in my marriage, my wife had gone away for a trip or something like that, and I was just kind of stuck there by myself in the house, and it was in that moment that I really was reminded of how important and how thankful I was for her. And so I think it really became the picture. That's the picture I have in my mind all the time, is just in any season, having her in front of me, having her there as my anchor and what I want to just kind of keep in front of me in all things. So that's part of it. Yeah, I think also just the imagery that I've had throughout this album, started in the first song, Nowhere Home, uses this imagery basically of a Polynesian long distance navigator,
which you've had experience in,
which I have no experience in at all. But the thought of a man casting off in a ship by himself, in a rocking ocean or something like that, and searching for that landing space. And so when we get to the beauty, I think I'm thinking of her, of my wife, and I'm thinking of reaching that destination. So yeah, those are some of the picture images I have.
For heaven's sakes, Akers, people's wives go out of town and they think about eating pizza in their underpants and petting the dog.
I'm not saying that didn't happen, man.
I can do both. Yeah, hey man, I didn't, I kind of liked it. Now I'm going to have to think about that, that Polynesian vibe. I didn't know that.
Well, see, hearing some of the background of the story, like, it gives even a little bit more vibrancy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think there's nothing instrumentally that evokes Polynesia or anything like that, but, it was certainly something that inspired me.
Yeah, that was a hair out of left field, that Polynesian thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to take it in consideration because you wrote the song and all, but like,
I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
I didn't see it coming.
It's right out of left field.
It's maybe the most obscure reference in the album.
It's just a medium time to be alive, man.
Hey, you think, hey, where's your marketing skills, Mike? What, they're coming out with that new Disney movie.
Which one?
I don't know. Isn't there a good?
What is it called?
Moana.
Yeah. Isn't that Polynesian?
Yes.
Yes, I actually wrote the song for that.
we're gonna pitch that as a soundtrack. That.
Okay, yeah. So there was this guy in Des Moines, right? And he was coming up with this. He was running a film, and he put ads on Craigslist. He's like, "I need actors for this film." And Ben and I get all goofed up about it. We're like, "We're gonna be in a film. It's gonna be great."
Yeah.
So we go down and audition for the main part. That's a definite no.
Yeah.
But they hire us on. Well, when I say hire, they mean we can come to the shot later. They're not gonna pay us any money.
Yeah. Right.
We get to rob this. I got to rob this gas station. It was my job. And so they shoot the scene, whatever, you know, and we're convinced that really our duty here is to write the soundtrack. We're going to write the soundtrack for this tune, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so we burn the midnight oil like 3 days in a row coming up with these tunes, you know, like, this will sell them. You know, he said he's not really interested, but I'm like, you just wait till this will blow him away, you know. It turns out the tunes that we write don't encapsulate life at all. They're just two guys playing drumsticks on top of a stool to make it feel raw. And then like an over-distorted guitar.
Hey, I might have a clip of that somewhere.
Do you?
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, you got to dig it up.
I got to hear that, man.
Yeah.
It wasn't totally awful, but I mean, it's not soundtrack quality. It doesn't bring you to the moment like Akers does. It kind of makes you think, I don't know, I forgot my Clark bar. That's what it does.
It could be a Polynesian guy that forgets his Clark bar.
Yeah, right on.
Hey, if you've forgotten your Clark bar, you want to know.
That's right.
This is this is a public service.
I hope I didn't leave it on the ship.
What's a Clark bar?
What?
What's a Clark bar?
It's candy. It's like a candy bar.
What is it, though?
It's got nougat, I'm guessing. Ben?
I don't know. I haven't had a Clark bar in a long time.
Probably people forget it.
I think that's one of those things that I don't think I've ever heard of a Clark bar.
No one forgets a cherry mash. You know what I'm saying? Everybody knows where that is. No?
Is it like a Klondike bar? Or?
You don't know what a cherry mash is either?
Never even heard of a cherry mash.
Acres, where are you at on this? Cherry mash?
I was just going along with you. I actually don't know what a Clark bar is either. Like, I've heard the phrase.
Am I the only guy in here who was raised poorly? Come on, I ate a lot of candy bars. All right, cherry mash and Clark bars are the only, I'm the only guy in the room.
What?
That's fair.
What, no, the cherry, is that the Bing? Is that the Bing cherry?
Yeah, the Bing cherry mash. Where it's the cherry, filling. It's like a paste even, like a pink paste, followed on top of chocolate and peanuts.
That sounds awful.
No, it's great. That's why they call it a mash. It wasn't born together. Some man put it together. It was well regarded enough.
It was love and care.
All right. Well, apparently when I can have sweets again, I got to try a Clark bar and a cherry mash.
No, I'd skip the Clark bar. Cherry mash, though.
Cherry mash. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, wait. I think I might have found his tune. Okay, hold on a sec.
Let's hear it. Let's see.
Can you guys hear that?
Yeah, I feel like I lost my Clark bar.
Drumsticks on a stool.
Hold on.
Feels raw.
He was like a Punisher type guy. That was what the
Hold
movie
on.
Was about.
Hold on, it's coming.
Frank Castle's on his way, I can feel it.
Dude, it feels like something.
Wait. Check out this.
Oh.
That's pants.
Yes, it is. Oh, man, it's like Shaft.
Yeah, see? I don't know if it's like Shaft.
Yes, it is. I can see Shaft walking down the street to this.
It takes a terrible Broadway turn here. You gotta wait till the piano section comes in.
Hold on.
Man, that'd be like 10 years ago.
I forgot about this song.
This is 10 years old.
Yeah.
Okay,
here it goes.
What?
Yeah, something's happened.
Now Shaft.
There you go. The piano was supposed to be, hey man, now we're running away from the law. Yeah, it totally took show tuning.
That was the moment he remembered the Clark bar.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh, Kance, gotta run back home. Get the Clark bar. Okay, it's back again.
Coming around.
That weird Broadway turn show tuning deal was awful. But now we're back to like a drug lord in Detroit.
That's him.
3 o'clock in the morning
Can you imagine the slow
in a sweet Cadillac with a bunch of steam coming off the ground.
Couldn't even get it on the low-rent
Christmas
movie.
Exact scene. I love it. Hey, man, I want to listen to this as I walk out of a Target.
See, I'm telling you. You're like, I bought a cherry mash.
That's the moment.
What's up, world?
People are like, what'd that guy just do? Bought a new mattress pad. What's up?
Mattress pad. Lafayette.
I just left the Target and got myself a sweet new set of dishes.
Hey, we should have played that before Acres. It would have sounded better. Oh, Acres put the quality tunes up, and then we offered that one out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you got to build on the show, not bring it down.
I'm going to edit that to go in the other direction. I'm going to act like we kicked off a show with it.
It's like, hey, man, check out our sweet tune.
So, so you can pick up the album. Go to chrisakersmusic.com. He's got a cool stuff. Now, you got some blog action out there, but you're an infrequent blogger, Acres.
It's very true.
So what has to be on your mind for you to kick out a blog post?
Yeah, how long have you been making promises and not fulfilling them?
My whole life, man. Yeah. I usually forget that I have that blog, and then I go to my website and remember that I've linked it to that. And look at my sad, sad showing. I think it's, what, is it 2 or 3 entries now?
Yeah.
Over how much time?
Probably over 2 years.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah. Does it still have the one that says, I'm new to blogging?
Hey, there's something to be said for suspense with your blog readers.
I always close with stay tuned, you know, just to see if anybody's just sitting there waiting still.
That one
back.
Guy 20 years later, I'm still tuning in, Chris.
Yeah,
I'm ready.
It's like a moment in Interstellar when the guy's just been waiting, you know, and he's like, where have you been? Well, you knew, man.
Yeah,
you knew about relativity.
Come on. Yeah. I made the mistake once of, like, I was doing a blog for the church or something, and I'm like, I thought, the way that I will make sure I blog consistently is if I promise to blog consistently out in the public, you know, I'll say, hey, you know, sorry, I haven't been blogging as often as I want. We're going to do leadership development, and I'm going to blog more often. And I blogged that time, and then one time 3 days later, and then I haven't touched it since. And that's been 6 years ago.
And I'm still waiting, man.
Yeah.
I'm sitting over here waiting.
Acres is like, I just want to lead people. Ben, tell me.
I might have favorited that blog spot, waiting for more blogs.
I couldn't produce it. I just don't have the might for it.
Yeah, I've been through this with Ben before. He picks a lot of writing avenues, and I'll get geared up about them. And now he's got me saddled into the Facebook where He posts things like, for your light reading, and it's some diatribe on Polycarp and the leaders.
It has nothing to do, it's not light reading at all.
It has got to be the hardest thing ever. I mean, I feel like he posts them just to make me feel stupid. I'm reading it, I'm like, he sounds like a holy man, but why does he talk like this? I don't understand anything he's saying.
Yeah, he posts something, this is elementary to me, but maybe you'll dig on it.
I did not say that.
Maybe you could glean something from this, oh stewards of the dirt.
It was, what was it? It was like a letter from Ignatius to the Philippians, like 60 years after the original Philippian letter. It was like, what was changed about them?
Light
what
is stuff.
He, right, yeah. But I am 100% certain he's right. I have seen that for your light reading thing. And then I'm like, hey, man, light reading is a regular Facebook post where I go, all right, I get the deal. I look at yours. I'm like, hey, man, I got to go to class. Like, I don't have time for this deal.
It's like 45 minutes here.
I got another homework assignment from Pastor Ben.
It was sarcasm, a little bit. A little bit sarcasm.
Akers, how do you feel your Facebook world is? Do you I don't see you tip on there too often, but like you might have me hidden.
Are you talking about my band page or my personal page?
Either
one. Like, how is the digital world treating you these days?
Oh man, you know, I mean, that's a good question to ask anybody, I think, right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's treating me pretty well. It's interesting to see how the news feed shapes up, and I think I spend more time probably observing than I do posting.
Yeah.
And I find that that's usually more helpful to people, but, hopefully it lends a little bit of weight to when I do post if it's worth posting, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Akers come out of left field and you're like, this must have really been building up and meaning something, the fact that you're willing to throw something out there.
I mean, his last post was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He barely blogs. I mean, I'm not sure he's living.
For your light reading.
Oh, you know, my father-in-law Wayne does people the service of putting the reading length, the time. He says estimated 3 minutes, and I think that's just really kind, you know.
Does that mean
unless you're the guy that's like 7 minutes in, like, am I that slow or something?
Wow, I feel horrible about myself now.
This pro presenter is judging me.
I'm in the first paragraph because they threw some like diatribe in there, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. I spend most of my time Googling your words.
Yeah.
Who's Ignatius?
And everybody sign up for the ladies' supper.
Is
that
Jack Black's band, Ignatius D?
Well, that's tricky.
I don't know. Here's the deal. That Facebook been a tough world lately. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, it's been sourced in conflict that we just kind of talked about this in Philippians is reasonableness was not to be found, right?
Yeah.
The things of where he says, let your reasonableness shine. And even good Jesus following folks are like, not today.
Yeah. Hey, I'm flip flying crazy. Want to hear about it?
Yeah. Here's another thing I thought of on a whim. Wing. Come on, man.
Hey, you know, that's the thing about social media, right? Like things you like wouldn't say to another person because like they wouldn't sit there and listen to you. Like things that I might know, like, I'm not going to bring that up to my wife because I'm going to look silly. I think everyone else will hear it though. Like, it's just, you know, it's just no, for some reason that's become our filter as to whether we have legit conversations. We like throw it out on Facebook and see how people react to it and then introduce it into everyday common life.
That's true. No, I mean, don't you figure that like, I'll tell you into times, you know, like the Lord gave us, he gave us space and opportunity to not immediately screw ourselves by opening our mouth too fast. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then we decide we're going to invent the telephone. And then the internet, they were like, there's too many blockades between me saying exactly what I want to say right now. Whiz bang, it's out there, you know? And like, I cannot say that it's been to our detriment. Like, it's not been a positive thing. And I'm actually not even against social media. I think it's great.
Sure.
But like, to some extent, it's somehow taken the license to be reasonable and just thrown it right out the can. Like, it's not even necessary. Here's who I am. Eat it. and that's the way people live, you know? And it's all a bit much.
Well, it's an inflated sense of self, right? Like, if something else happens in the world and you feel like, hey, people's got to hear what I want to say about it, that's an inflated sense of self. You may be interesting, and perhaps God has given you a skill or the other, but it's the same Lord Jesus who has you, you know, being slow to speak, digesting things in, being reasonable, you know, making sure that you're showing, grace and providing hope in the words that you're speaking. And so, like, you know, your instant reaction to something or another, or trying to take in someone else's instant reaction, which causes you to stop being able to digest the world on your own. Like, I've seen that from people who they get used to hearing from people on social media, and they're like, I don't know what to think about this until this person tells me. I'm like, come on, man. Like, we're ruining decent skills we have to look at the world and say, you know what? I actually don't care about this, and I'm okay with that, as opposed to, that guy's really fired up about it, so am I.
Right.
It's like a tag team of a bunch of, like, half-cocked jokers who don't have anything better to do but kind of pass it around.
And I think about it, like, all the benefits you'd think of, say, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when there were, like, this internet, and everyone's going to get all connected together, and you'll be able to get news like this. And I'm like, great. All the things that I thought would happen would be, like, all the stuff that goes on in other countries that I am ignorant of. And now I will know. And then I can't be the foolish American that I've always been, and I will be forced to say, we got to do something. If we're going to be a global society, then we're going to care for a global society, and we're going to help poor. I don't care if they're here or there. And here's what we're going to do. And instead, we've basically just taken a spotlight on our own grandiose behavior and said, hey, Gilmore Girls coming out into the Thanksgiving. Here's 5 trailers. I better go check it out right now. And there I am, like, ooh, what's going to happen? You know, like a fool.
Right, right. Social media causes me to engage in behavior I never would if it wasn't present. Like, I don't ever look out my living room window and look across at my neighbor's house and go, I wonder what they're thinking right now.
What's going through Bill's head?
Right. But like, what do I do when I whip out the old phone and get on the Facebook? I'm like, what's Bill thinking? And, like, for some reason, he's a level of importance in my life. Like, I care what he's doing or thinking right now, potentially what he's eating, what he's taking a picture of, where he went on vacation last week, things that I might ask him, I might care about if I run into him at the mailbox. But, like, I'm just like, I got nothing better to do. Bill has something to say to me.
Actually, and overall, it's exhausting is what it is. It's just absolutely exhausting to attempt to pour into that many folks. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, even let's say you're doing it with the best intentions, right? Like, you're not on there to cause a bunch of trouble. You got quite a few friends, and you're just like, I just want to keep in touch with these people.
Yeah.
And, like, that turns out to be a lot of people. And now you've turned out to be an inch-deep friend for, like, 300 guys. You know, and, like, I'm not saying that you can't be loving and you can't serve, because you can do both those things at an inch deep. But, like, that can't be your whole existence, is inch deep relationships with 1,000 people.
Because then you never get deeper.
Because you never get deeper. And then, and really all it is, because, I mean, obviously on social media, you get to choose how you're portrayed. And which actually should blow your mind on how some people are portrayed on the Facebook. You know what I'm saying? You have a complete option.
Yeah, you had every chance here, man.
That, and even after you posted that, you had the option to delete that.
Yeah. I mean, you had every...
And you didn't.
Every step could have stopped you from being a donkey. And you're like, donkey time. and there you went.
Yep.
But like, all that aside, you know, like, sometimes it is nice to see what people that you've lost touch with or don't get to hang around with much are doing. You're like, good for them or whatever. But the truth of the matter is, like, you spend way more time swimming in an inch deep pool than you ever used to. Now you're an inch deep swimming on your belly with your bum hanging out the water and your feet up in the air, and never actually finding a pool of rich, refreshing water. And, like, there's something to be said about that, and something at least to be aware of, to be leery of. And it's not putting the big boo-hoo on social media, because that is really not the case. I really think anything can be used for God's glory, and it's fine.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, on the whole, I fall into this quite a bit. I'll end up being an inch deep pool for a couple of weeks, and I'm like, I don't know any of these people. I'm struggling with stuff. I've told no one. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, that's a disaster. That is not a way to live.
Yeah. And people that you didn't, slowly, the way that they filter who it is that you are swimming in, basically, right. You know, it changes so quickly and so subtly.
Yeah.
That pretty soon you pause and you're like, wait. My entire news feed or whatever it is that I'm looking at is full of people that I barely interact with.
Right. I think I went to high school with this guy. Yeah. I don't know. He's friends with other people.
But he's having a powerful impact on my life now, because I'm seeing it every day, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess he's having a hard time getting to work because his car's broken down. I mean, that's tough life. But I don't know. I don't know who this man is.
That happened to me last week. I'm friends with a guy on Facebook, and I thought I was friends with him because, like, we went to school with him. But it turns out he planted a church somewhere, and I finally clicked on his name, because he comes up like twice a day, and I clicked on his name and, like, I don't recognize that guy at all. And then I looked him up, and he did not graduate from my high school. He's like 10 years older than I am. And I have no idea why I'm connected with this man at all. And then I told the story to my wife, and she says, you should unfriend him. I thought, oh, no, I don't, I mean, we're kind of buddies.
Yeah, he seems all right.
I see him twice a day.
I take him in. You know, he seems like a good feller. And it, like, yeah, it was a weird thing. And then there's also like a couple people, like every time they pop up, I got to check them out. I'm like, oh yeah. And then I thought, you know, maybe I just don't have to. Maybe that's not a thing, and maybe I don't have to be friends with him. And then what? There's one dude. I mean, he posts the foulest things that I've ever seen in all my life.
It's not me, right?
No, I don't think I don't think so.
You really shaped up. I mean, so it's not
his name is Chris Baker.
Name protected.
He has stolen a picture from your website and superimposed a turban on it. I'm not saying the man's not clever. I'm just saying it's vulgar. But anyway, like, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, so I'll use social media to spread light to the world. But then I think to myself, like, this guy's like pumping out darkness. I mean, he's got it full on, things that I don't need to be thinking about him thinking about. And I think I should just unfriend this man. I thought, no, I'm going to be light. And I still can't fit. I hide him probably 6 months out of every year and I bring him back. And then he says something really offensive. And I think to myself, oh man, I can't, I got to give you another break, friend. And I hide him again. It's a rough world trying to manage that kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. See, it's exhausting. That's what I'm saying.
I can't give that guy an inch though. He's foul.
My immediate thought is, we do Facebook fast, but then I thought, how counterintuitive, right? Like, just before you went on your fast, you announced it to the world, you're going, why don't you just go on a fast? You know what I'm saying? You don't need their approval that you ain't gonna be on there.
Just don't tell anyone.
Just be like, I'm out. I'm just gonna be gone for a little while and reset myself. Actually, we just instituted this at my house. We did a technology ban for the week of Thanksgiving so we could work on, you know, the stuff we're actually thankful for, the stuff that's important and I'm not saying technology is evil, but like sometimes you just need a hard reset. And what's that guy from Hands for Haiti or whatever was talking about?
Brand,
this? Yeah, he was talking a little bit about this last week when he was talking about some short-term mission stuff. As he said, people really get fired up and they're like, I loved it. I'm going to move to Haiti. I love it here, you know? And he goes, until you start asking him questions, it's like, what did you do, you know? And he said, well, you know, we got up in the morning and we did our devotionals and we hung out together as a community. And then, okay, so what'd you do after that? And then we went out and helped people all day. We served a bunch of people in the community and we ate a big lunch together and whatnot. And then we came back for dinner, did some worship tunes and hung out some more with my community, went to bed. He's like, do you do any of those things at home? Well, no, I don't do any of those things at home. Okay, so here's the deal. It's like, I don't know if you exactly love Haiti. You love what God has created community to be. And so you can move to Haiti. There's no doubt that's a possibility, right? But look at the things you're really loving. You're loving being in community with people and worshiping and reading God's word and helping folks, you know, and that's what you're in love with. And like sometimes I think like God's path to joy, is so simple and we make it complicated with weird things. And really he's set it up. He's like, just trust in me. Follow me where I go. Do the things that I say. These aren't rules and laws that I'm going to hit you over a board with. They're more like, this is how you get to joy. And it breaks my heart when you choose not to do that. You know, and so it's just a dad looking down going, come on, man. I've told you how it's done. And this is the way I want you to live because I love you, not because I want to hurt you. I love you. And so we did a technology freeze at the house and said, look, you know, let's get back to what we can do. We're going to play a credit card Monopoly or something, which I hate. And, it takes so long to debit the cards. You know what I'm saying? I can do flip the cash out.
Hey, man, it's like that Clue Jr.
Yeah.
I hate Clue Jr.
That's not fun.
It's the worst game ever.
So, anyway, when you do a technology ban, I'd find the old school Monopoly and go that route.
It's the guy with the juice in the thing, and I hate it. Sorry.
Wait a minute. Did they tone down the weapons so they weren't as offensive?
Yeah, he's eating. Someone's leaving cookie crumbs.
Oh, yeah, no.
What? I hate that game.
Has someone still been killed, or are they just asleep somewhere?
No. Some dude eating cookies just got murdered.
Some dude's feelings were hurt in the study. Oh, no. Oh, no, that's awful.
It was Colonel Mustard with the offensive Facebook post. In
why
the
didn't
lavatory.
You just hide it, man?
It was Bob Conservative.
old high school friend with the harsh words and the booby meme in the library. That's the guy. That's the guy I have to hide. He can't keep himself under control.
His feelings were hurt. You know, I mean, we got to shy away from crime now. We can't even tell people what crime is. That's terrible.
Wait, so, Boova, tell me about this flash mob you were involved in.
Oh, it was awesome. Now, the flash mob has not happened yet, which I'm excited about.
Okay.
I'm going to try and stop it still. But, so I got a Snapchat from a friend from school. And it's one of the, it's not even a picture, it's just one of the chats, right? And so she says, hey man, do you want to be involved in a flash mob for Jesus? And I immediately asked, and she, right after she goes, are you a good singer?
Excellent.
Is and this so, the same question?
And so I responded with, no and no. No, I do not want to be involved in a flash mob for Jesus. And no, I'm not a good singer. And she goes, wait a minute. Why don't you want to be involved in a flash mob for Jesus? She was not worried about the fact that I was not a good singer. Right. She was more worried about the fact that I was not interested in this flash mob. She goes, you love talking to people about Jesus. I said, yes, I do. She goes, you do it all the time. I said, yes, I sure try to. And she goes, isn't it such an awesome opportunity to go out and in a big way plant seeds for Jesus? And I said, how exactly do you think you're planting seeds? I said, if you can give me an honest explanation as to that, we'll start talking. And she goes, well, we'll be singing in front of people. We'll be singing about God, and we'll be talking about him and stuff like that. I said, okay, what if someone has a question in the middle of your song? And she goes, huh? I said, what if someone says, hey, hold up.
What can you only imagine? Wait.
Exactly. What about this 1,000 courts thing? What's going on right now?
Why is there so many courts?
Why are there a lot of corrupt? Are there a lot of criminals that they need this many courts?
There's hurt feelings everywhere.
I said, what happens if somebody has a question? She goes, I don't know what to say. I'm like, yeah, exactly my point. So no one can interact with you, with your song. And she goes, okay. And I said, so I get what you're saying. You are saying the name of Jesus, which you and I both agree has power. I believe in the concept of worship, and I think it's a really cool deal. But you're not doing it for a gospel perspective. You're doing it so people hear the name of Jesus and go, oh, that was cute. Like, you get another Facebook video where someone does a cool song, but that's it. You're not actually furthering the kingdom. I said, now, if you want me to be the guy that's sitting on the sidelines, and so when someone says, hey, I have a question about what that gal just sang, they can come over to me, and then we'll have a conversation about Jesus, I am in. But when it comes down to it, I'm not going to be the guy that just goes and sings in front of the deal. And so she got all kinds of upset at me. She gets upset saying, I don't know why you're not wanting to spread the gospel of Jesus. I don't know why you're not wanting to spread the gospel of Jesus. And I said, hey, here's the deal. You are not spreading the gospel of Jesus. I said, I love your heart in this. I think it's amazing that you're excited to do this and you're not afraid of doing this in front of people and you want to be bold in this perspective, but I'm pushing you to be bold in a more impactful perspective. I said, rather than just singing to these people, how about you and I go in there and we start walking up to random tables and we sit down and we honestly and earnestly try to get to know these people and build relationships with them so that we're in very awesome spots to be able to talk to them about who their father is. I said, I'm not talking about just randomly sitting down and going, hey, everybody, you enjoying that pizza? You know who invented pizza? Jesus. And then having that conversation or doing the creepy, hey, man, I see you just drank from the water fountain. You know who's the water of life? Jesus. Like, that's weird. And we're not going to go Ned Flanders on the deal. I want to build relationships with these people. It's not about being a verbal Bible track. And she goes, what do you mean by verbal Bible track? I said, do you know what a Bible track is? She goes, yeah, it's the piece of paper that's got the verses on it. I said, how many people have ever come up to you and said, man, I found Jesus on a piece of paper today, and I'm super excited about it? And she goes, well, no one's ever said that. I said, has anyone ever in your entire time calling yourself a Christ follower come up to you and said, hey, man, I heard this sweet worship tune. I don't know who Jesus is, but that tune really made me start going towards him, and I want to know more about him. And she goes, well, no, that's never happened. I said, yeah, because worship is not really meant for non-believers. It's worshiping God and giving him worth. It's not meant to be, hey, let non-believers hear you singing my name and then they'll find me. It could be that, and I'm not saying God doesn't have that, but that's not normally how it goes. And so an hour and a half of this conversation, she's still upset at me about why I'm saying that I don't want to go and further the kingdom of Christ. And so we've compromised to the point where she goes, well, I just don't think you understand where I'm coming from. And I said, I do not understand where you're coming from.
You are correct.
I said, but like I said, if you do a flash mob, you make sure I'm there. I'm happy to sit along the sidelines. And anytime somebody wants to talk about Jesus, they can come walk over to me. Y'all keep singing, and I'm going to keep talking to people about Jesus so we can actually have an interaction. And that way, if they have questions, I can answer them, or I can actually try and start building a relationship with them rather than just calling on his name and saying, hey, there's a really cool dude that you don't know about, and here's a cool song about him. I would rather be the one that's just like, hey, there's a really cool dude that loves you entirely and created your existence, and here's why he loves you, and here's why you should love him.
I think it's dead on, Buva. There's two things that stood out to me in this story. One, that their discipleship program is not to spread seeds as much as hit people with the bag of seeds.
Wham!
And two, have you listened to worship music and thought about it from an an outsider's perspective,
it's creepy.
There's a large amount of blood and lambs that are unexplainable.
It's cultish and creepy.
Unexplainable. Blood, lambs, usually some kind of storm rolling in. And like, none of that is inviting unless you understand the author of the storm.
Why are Christians always in storms?
I don't understand why life is so hard. It seems to me you're offering me nothing but blood, lambs, and bad weather.
I don't even like sheep.
And I'm not interested. But that's dead nuts. And like you said, like, I think you nailed it. Like, I love the heart on that thing. Like, I know why you want to do it. Let's just direct it. You know what I'm saying? Let's just direct it at people and not the, I picked up a 40-pound bag. Wham! What do you think of this?
Yeah, like, there's a thing about spreading seeds where, like, it still has to be a fertile ground. Or even, let's go with a ground at all.
Right.
Right? Like, if you knock on a guy's door and chuck a bunch of seeds into his living room, like, it ain't gonna happen. It ain't gonna happen.
Spreading the word.
And so, and I suppose, like, here's the thing. Here's a hard hitter for me is, sometimes we get so comfortable with the thought that says, I'm just sowing seeds that, like, you actually might just be chucking them in a guy's living room with where, like, you didn't cultivate a ground. You didn't farm anywhere. You didn't, like, the way the Bible uses that is not intended to say you chuck it into the manure pile. The thought is to say is you may not be there the whole, it's a time issue. You may not be there the whole time. Other people might be there to water it. Other people might be there to help, like, watch it grow and then produce and then multiply. You may not be there for the full length of time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, your job is just to kind of walk up and down the streets as the town crier, yelling
the Jesus troubadour.
Yeah, like, if that worked, then there would be at least 12 homeless guys downtown discipling people for Jesus.
Right.
Who just kind of walk up and down and shout things in the air. And so it's the right heart. Except for, hey, let me introduce you to a relational God by producing an event.
Right.
Or a very flat response in introducing you to him.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's interesting is because, the revivals in the 18th century, 19th century, early 1900s, effective word, right? Like that wasn't a relational thing. That was people thought like a guy walking around reviving. Okay? God's word is powerful. Do I think people can meet Jesus through a song? Yes. Do I think it's normative? Probably not. But like, could someone hear a song and could it lead somewhere? God has done crazy things with circumstances I can't imagine. Okay? But that isn't how Jesus discipled, right? So like, if I strip everything else away and say, as a follower of Jesus, I actually follow Jesus. What Jesus does are the types of things that I do. His was much more relational. His was interacting with people. His was telling stories, introducing people to Jesus. And it was very much more of a, it wasn't so much of an event-oriented thing that had no possible way to connect with them, right? It was like, yay, high fives, turn off video camera, we walk away.
Right.
Did you meet God there? Like, that's where the hesitancy, I guess, would be. Not that God can't do anything he wants with any of that. And it's possible that he can. It's just, am I actually looking at people and saying, I love you because Jesus loves me, and I look at a world and I say, I love you. I'm doing this flash mob because I love you. Like, probably not. Yeah. Like, there was something else baked into that says, this would be cool. And so, as opposed to, like, I love you, I'm uncomfortable just sitting down at your table and striking up a conversation, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because I'm so excited for you to meet my Jesus.
Right.
Like that would be the distinction. And here's the thing is it's different for different people. That like you might have, I'm going to just take these numbers for what it's worth, right? But if 100 people trying to do a flash mob, my guess is you got 3 people in there who actually love people and are like, heck yeah, this is actually going to do anything. And they believe it. And I freaking think that it might for those 3 people. Your other 97 are probably like, we get to be part of a flash mob. Cool.
You know, is this going to end up on Facebook?
Yeah. Here's the most passionate guy will lead people to Jesus through the most crazy means you've ever met. Because that guy actually means them. It's just not prescriptive for everybody else. And so I would actually rule out the flash mob because I don't have people trading on things that they otherwise aren't doing any different.
Right.
But it's crazy interesting to see all the ways. Like, for every time I say, hey, tracks don't work, somebody did it. Right?
Right.
Some dude got a pamphlet somewhere and was like, I love Jesus now, and you're like, ah!
And that's exactly what I told her. I said, I'm not saying it won't work entirely. Like, I'm not saying there's not a single person or story in the world where somebody did a flash mob and they started singing an amazing praise song and somebody heard the name of Jesus and went, hey man, that name, I know that name.
Yeah.
I need to talk to those people about that guy. Cause I remember that from, I went to Sunday school one time with my buddy, and I felt weird about it, but now I'm in a hard place, right? Like, that can happen.
Sure.
Exactly, though. It's not normative.
And it depends on your environment. It depends on the people. Rice Lee was talking about that when he was in here. It makes a difference in places like Salt Lake because they actually don't have information.
Right.
Whereas
this is the first time they've heard it.
In the Midwest, I'm not running into people that have no concept of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And so I would be very hesitant that handing them data or information, true things about Jesus is actually what does it. It's a much more relational culture here. And so I think the random passerby event might be a, oh, hey, that's cool, but you're probably not going to accomplish, what you think you're going to accomplish, or you've started a process way more inefficiently than you would need to, that like, a handshake and a coffee invite or a dinner or a casual conversation repeated for the next 6 weeks, you probably actually make a lot more progress for what you want. So if that's what you really care about, the question is your method actually doing what you expect?
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, Boova, that's crazy. Now, wait, the other Boova-centric item. There was a film crew following you earlier this week? No, last week.
Last week, yep.
Last week. Why?
So there was a thing that happened at DMAC where an email got sent out to all the students asking about us explaining our situations of dealing with depression, coping with anxiety, all kinds of mental health possible problems, and more specifically suicide awareness and things like that, right? Mm. And so I've been very immersed in that environment in the last 10 years, and so I decided to respond to that and say, you know, this is what I've done, this is how I've come through, and this is my life and what I've gone through. And so I get an email back from the counseling staff asking me to come in for an interview and to kind of just tell my story and tell where I'm coming from and what else happened in my life. So I went to this interview, talked to the two gals. They asked me questions, I answered them, and they liked my answers. And they liked my experiences and what I'd been through. And you know, how my faith has helped me through this, and you know, the passing of both my parents, and dealing with like friends that have either committed suicide or have attempted, and all good stuff, right? And so they invited me to do a kind of like a small film documentary kind of thing with them, to where they were going to have a film crew that did an interview with me. 30 minutes worth of interviewing, kind of asking me a bunch of questions about depression and asking me a bunch of questions about coping with depression, coping with, issues in life and how to persevere through that, how I'd respond to someone who, is a survivor of a suicide, how I would respond to a student who was, contemplating suicide, all this kind of stuff, like a large, a list of questions. And so did this like half an hour interview with them. I was one of three or four students that were picked throughout all of DMAC to do this. And then they kind of followed me around campus for a little bit and took some, I think they called it B-roll. I don't know if that's the
one. Some candid photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Of Boova,
right?
On the prowl.
Right, exactly. Of me walking around campus or me sitting in the student center doing homework or something like that. It's just, and it's all part of this federal program, that's about, I think specifically suicide prevention and awareness, more specifically within college campuses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of funny because, So a couple weeks ago, I actually went through the anniversary of my mom's suicide. It was 6 years ago on November 7th. And so I've been having a lot of difficulty with that. Like it's been hurting a lot. And I've had a lot of struggle coming up to that. And so every year has been different. But this year's just been hitting me really hard. And it's kind of put me in a depressive state where I was not dealing with it very well. And I was praying to God, just asking him, you know, there's a lot of emotions that I thought I was done with. I was angry at my mom, and I was resenting my mom for what had happened. And I was not excited to be in that place. And I hate when I get that way because I take it out on a lot of my relationships, and I take it out on the memory of my mother. And I don't like doing that. And it's a painful thing for me. And so I'm sitting there just asking God, just show up and show off with something, show up with something that's going to make it so this is no longer such, an awful time. Like obviously it's never going to get great, but at the same point in time, I don't want to hate my mom. Like, I don't want to be angry at her for this stuff anymore. I want that to be gone. I want joy through you and peace through you for this stuff. And so, and then God kind of just shows up with this opportunity for me to not only tell the story of my mom and all of the suicide attempts and all that different stuff and her eventual suicide and stuff like that. But like getting to tell that story is a therapeutic thing for me. But more importantly, God made it so that it was not only about me, which is a big deal in my life because I am a prideful beast and I have, so much issues with keeping stuff about me. And God just showed up with this whole thing that's like, hey, you know, you're going to think this is a cool thing for you where you get to talk about your story, but it is going to be possibly bigger than you could think. And it was an opportunity for me to not only share the story of my mom, but to share the story of Jesus in my life, even if they cut that stuff out, I shared it to a film crew, right?
Yeah.
Like I talked to counselors about how as a 19-year-old kid, like I had to deal with this stuff and I fell and the only thing that was able to pick me back up was Jesus Christ as my savior. And like having that relationship was the only thing that makes me be able to stand here today and honestly be alive right now. And if that's it, that's an amazing thing for me because I love telling people about my dad, my father, and it's a wonderful feeling. And so it was just a cool thing where I thought it was going to be a fun deal where I got a chance to tell my story. And then God just shows up and says, you know, it's more than you letting me be glorified through this, right? Like letting me be the one who gets glory and who gets honor through this. And, you know, I had to stop myself before going in the interview, and I really did a thing that I was glad that I did because I really started praying. I'm like, God, make certain that my mind and heart don't try and take this over for my glory because I'm full of myself. I really am. And God, make it so that it's something that's about you, not me. And it totally was. It was such an awesome opportunity to get a chance to sit there and talk to the film crew and talk to the interviewers and talk to the counselors and just kind of share my story. And I hope that I said Jesus' name enough that there's no way they're going to be able to cut him out. That like some students can possibly glean from this the opportunity to hear that there's no fancy 5-step program that's not rooted in God's love. Like there's nothing that made my life so far a success story when it comes to dealing with depression and all this different stuff that wasn't completely immersed in the fact that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior and I get my peace and my worth and my love from Him versus anything that I can say, well, hey, you gotta meditate every day or hey, you gotta make certain that you find some people you love, right? Like it's not just about your purpose, it's about His purpose. And that's such an important thing that I hope that, like I said, if no student ever hears, at least the counselor's got to hear and at least the film crew got to hear.
Amen, man.
And so it was an amazing opportunity that it was a whole day of just absolute peace for me. And I was not expecting it all. I literally thought it was just going to be another thing where I'm just like, okay, I'm going to give this to God and let it be. But it was just such an awesome day to be able to tell stories about my parents and remember all that stuff. But then again, just be able to tell God's story. And give my testimony of how I'm alive today. It was such a cool opportunity. I'm really excited. That is going to be a part of like I said, a little mini series about depression and dealing with the stress of being a college student. But then there's a possibility that it's going to go bigger than just DMAC because it's a part of a federal program that DMAC got a federal grant for. So there's a possibility that it will leave our campus and go to multiple campuses. And I'm not even going to try and figure out how big it's going to go because I'm going to let God do that. Because even if I thought of something really huge, there's a chance that that's just a Boova size thing and God's got something even bigger. And who knows? My big may be different than God's big. God's big could be the one person that helps and my big could be 100,000. So I'm going to let God define what that looks like. So yeah.
That's awesome, Boova. It's my favorite part about the Lord. Boova says, Lord, I just want peace. That's all I want. And he goes, how about a film crew? What if I sent some people
put
over?
Peace?
I mean, are you going to tell the whole story? How about that? Yeah, I guess.
It's like, all right, God,
I guess that sounds
that
right.
Could work.
I mean, it never ever looks like what you think it's going to look like.
Right. Oh,
it
absolutely.
Never ever looks like. This is, and that's what kind of rounded out our Job thing I was talking about with the ladies earlier today, I was reading through Job with the gals, you know, and it's kind of a tough book for a 6 and a 9-year-old girl, but we were going to plow through it anyway. And anyway, we got up to the point where God shows up and starts putting the heavy down. And I asked him who we are in the story. And, the youngest one guessed Jesus because she always guesses Jesus. And I said, no, that's wrong. And then she
but
guessed.
But that's always
Joel.
The right answer.
Yeah, I said, not in this house, Curly. Get over the bed. How dare
Same
you?
Same Sunday school.
We're going to do Hebrews next. You don't straighten up.
Talk about Melchizedek.
Hey, I got a Ignatius to the Philippians if she wants to read through it.
I heard that's a light read. I like
that. And so the 9-year-old is she's well versed in me. She's like, we're the Elihu. We're the people who aren't doing right. And I said, yeah, that's right. That's right. And I said, why are these guys, why are we having such trouble with these fellas? And it came to it where, of all their babbling for like 30 chapters, they're presuming to know what God knows. They're presuming to speak on God's behalf. Mm. They're presuming to say this is how God will do something, and this has to be what happened. And like all of that was built in a self-righteousness and your ability to sit in a seat and point a finger. And like it hit me when Booba was talking. I'm like, we are Elihu. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you'd have said, if Boo would have came and asked me, you know, I'm feeling rough about this thing. I just want some peace. I'm like, pray for peace. You know, and in the back of my head, I'm like, the Lord will provide a wave of peace that will just rest upon you like a dove.
You will not understand it.
And the Lord goes, film crew.
Yeah.
Let me send some guys over. I'm going to need you to walk around and tell people things. You know, and I'm like, I'm blown away because I've repeatedly told the children, just tonight, that we are Elihu, only to find out that I am indeed still Elihu. Even in my best days, amen. I am still Elihu, but the Lord has at least given me the ability to know that I am,
but what,
to know the difference.
Think about what happened there, though. Like, something where, completely reasonably, you're in a circumstance like that, right? And you're saying, God, I want something that will help me. I want to not feel this way, or I want to stop worrying about it, or being anxious about it, or, you know what, or process it correctly, whatever the answer is, right? And God's response to a right request from one of his children for peace, and he says, I will use it to glorify me and to serve others. Right? Like, the very thing that otherwise, that actually, it's interesting thing that is ultimately where the peace came from, right? Because like, that's how I think of peace coming, right? I sit somewhere and it waves over me.
Yeah, right.
And then I look out the window and I see a dove and I smile.
I meditated for a while, then looked at a tree and went,
like a cheesy devotional.
Yeah. And sometimes it happens. Yeah. But yeah. No.
Akers doesn't want to discount this. He likes the wave of peace.
I've just experienced it sometimes. But,
right on.
But yeah.
Right. So it's like, it's not that you can't have it that way, but it's interesting to see that sometimes like the answer to how do I provide you peace is like, through your pain, I turn that into a way that otherwise serves God and shows love and service to others. And there's peace found in that, right? To see that like there is a, instead of coming to terms with it, there becomes something that otherwise produces a good into the world from something that otherwise was not a good.
Yeah.
Or that's hard to see as it could.
Which is basically the only way that God promises things. He says, everything that I do is for my glory and your joy.
Right.
I don't do one thing at a time. I only do two.
That's true. He works on those levels. Like, reasonably, no one could say, hey man, a guy got murdered and put on a cross. How could that be a good? Yeah. Well, I figured it out.
Here's the deal.
Yeah. So, if there's a lesson that probably even more broad, it would be, is that let me continue to trust God to solve or to be part of the circumstances and to keep his promises. But for heaven's sakes, keep your eyes open for how he's going to do it.
Right.
Like, delight in the fact that God will provide. The exciting part is to see how he will do it. In what way will he otherwise provide for the thing that he promised? And it's almost always it's a God-sized answer, not a man-sized answer.
I always feel cheesy when I advocate for this, though, but that's such an awesome reason to do the, like we've talked about on here, prayer journaling.
Yeah.
Like, to do the whole, you know, this is exactly what I asked God for. And I've done that before where, like, I wrote expectations, which I probably wouldn't do anymore, but like I wrote, like, hey, God, you know.
Then you look up, suggest, are you taking suggestions?
Yeah, exactly. Like, here's what I need, God. Here's three ways you could possibly do it.
here's what I came up with.
And then see if you, like, 6 years later, look back and see if you had a check mark next to any of your suggestions, which is probably a no.
That would be so awesome if the Lord put, like frowny faces next to him while you were sleeping. Like, good try, son.
You woke up. No. That's a unanimous no from God on the three suggestions from Booba. No, but like writing down something you're asking God for, whether it be like peace in a situation like this, or whether you're asking God for boldness in your faith of going and speaking to people about him, or whatever, shaking up your life because you feel comfortable and you don't want to anymore, which
yeah.
I you better be ready for that prayer, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gonna ask God to eliminate your comfortability, and then you go, hey God, why am I no longer comfortable? You gotta realize, like that is not a deal where you go,
glad
okay, God.
You wrote it down,
yeah,
man.
You're not gonna say, hey God, take away my comfortability. He goes, all right, your mattress is no longer ultra firm. It's gonna be this. It's like, that's not how that works.
I've been sitting by this tree for days. Where's my weight of peace?
You're used to the ultra firm. Now you got the plush mattress. Oh, buddy. Oh, God eliminated my comfortability. No, he's gonna make you lose your job or something, or he's gonna take you to a different country, or he's gonna show you that there's so much stuff. I mean, just be ready for the consequences of that prayer. But seriously, writing down that kind of stuff, and I'm advocating it for as a hypocrite because I don't do it, but like, you know, writing down the prayer itself and then looking back and saying, this is exactly how God showed up with that. And if anything, how awesome of a story of your life is that, where you get to go, you know, 40 years from now in your walk, you look back at when you first started walking with Christ, or 10 years into it, when you had your first child, what your prayer life looked like. And then you get to go, I remember that prayer, and I remember how God completely shook my life because of that.
Yeah.
And it's such a cool thing to be able to reflect on and tell people about. So
I haven't been part of that conversation, but what I love about the advocating for journaling and everything and telling your story and being ready is that the more you do it, the better you know your story.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think about it. I've gone back to old journals and read things and been like, wow, I forgot I was that guy.
Right. Right.
I forgot I wrestled with that. And
yep.
Wow, look at what God has done. Yeah.
Testament number two, right? I forgot I wrestled with that.
Right.
Right. Like stuff that was it created to stronghold you, and you're like, I did used to deal with that. Yeah. And like, you get to say that used to be me.
Right. You know, at youth group this week, we actually talked about testimonies. And it was a word that obviously we know, but I wanted to see if like 10-year-olds knew it, or 13-year-olds knew it. So I asked them, I said, you know, hey, what's testimony look like? And they go, it's a testimony. And I'm like, okay, so don't use the definition in the definition, or the word in the definition. They go, and so we kind of started this thing because they're so scared to talk, and I love it. It cracks me up. But I refuse to let them be scared to talk. So I made them work together, like, to come up. I said, just throw a word out, and then you bounce off that word, and you bounce off that word. And we came up with this definition I kind of liked, which was God's story through us, which is our testimony. And it was funny because myself and our other youth leaders, we talked about our testimony. And you're absolutely right. You know, being able to go back and look at that, and then be able to tell that story fluently, not necessarily to sharpen the craft so that you're good with your tongue being able to say it, but from the perspective of like, every detail that you can give out is another thing that people can bring from and look at, well, that's another character of God, or that's another part of piece of the character of God, how he worked through that. It's such a cool thing. So,
well, yeah, I mean, as time passes, the context of that story continues to expand.
Right.
Even if the terms of the story itself didn't, right? The context used to be, I met Jesus, I struggled with this. 5 years later, your context is now, you don't struggle with that thing anymore.
Right.
Or you've been asking God for something, he answered and either answered the way you expected or not expected or whatever. So like, the story continues to roll, right?
Well, yeah.
So your environment continues to change around those things, and you get to see it like, as, think of, this is cool. Time passes as a to reveal that which God has done.
Right.
Right. Where we otherwise say, we look at God interjecting our lives in moments in time and saying, what did God do, as opposed to, what is God doing?
Doing.
Yeah. And it's such a cool thing to think that, like, that when I wake up tomorrow morning, like, there's an opportunity that God continues to reveal what he's been up to. Like,
right.
And he's been on this process telling a broad narrative of his redemption to humanity for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. Like, and our expectation is, like, we get to be a part of that. We get to meet people and otherwise share kingdom stuff and help people meet Jesus. And, like, that story continues to blossom in the work of his, of those that love and follow him. And like, his kingdom work is done through his people. And so, like, we're even part of that story. But, like, even specific things that you're asking for, and you're saying, God, I just need help, or I just want peace, or like whatever these broad list of things is like, if we give those things to God and then just keep your eyes open and watch as he continues to reveal those things as time passes, like, it's such a cool thing to find yourself constantly in the middle of. Like, he didn't answer, he's answering.
Right.
Just like the kingdom is not here, it continues to be here. Like, it continues to evolve and grow. It's not a point in time.
Yeah, it's not a fixed point.
Yeah, and so like it's such a cool thing that we want the safety of the firmness of those types of things as opposed to the mercy and the glory of continuing to be part of God's revelation. Mm. Like that's cool. Mm. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us so far. Let's do this. Let's hook up with another in studio song from Chris Akers. So we've been listening to tunes from his album Nowhere Home. It's out it came out November 15th. So it's a wee baby here in the month of November for a release.
That was awful.
Still in diapers.
That was awful.
Thank you.
I'm embarrassed to even be here.
God is still revealing himself in me.
The progression of your accents.
Hey, so can I ask real quick before we roll this tune?
It's a wee baby.
Man.
What are you trying?
He's trying to say.
We're going for Scottish.
It's a wee baby.
A wee baby. No, you gotta say, you gotta say baby, like the guy from,
There's no baby.
Yeah, hold on.
It's baby.
No. I just saw it.
From The Brave.
What's the Disney movie?
The Brave.
Princess Merida?
But the dad says, is this a naked.
Oh, Duncan.
A naked baby.
Naked baby.
See?
Yeah.
That sounded Indian.
Yeah.
It's Polynesian.
Like Pakistani.
I don't think it's Polynesian.
All over the world. I'm sorry.
Akers, you just play the tunes, all right?
You could just sit quietly in the corner.
My question was, though, is like, okay, people get hard copies of the CD. Like, you get physical copies.
That's something that's still in the works. It's just a more complicated process than, and, you know, I tried to read up on this and timing and how you could plant all these seeds so that they could blossom and grow and, you know, come out at the exact same time. And that's one that I just wasn't on.
Just don't throw them on some dude's living room floor.
Yeah. I thought, you know, maybe once I have these albums, I'll just open doors and toss them.
Literally kick the door in, toss in an album and go, Jesus!
Well, that or I'll just say the name of the album at them. I hope that they, you know.
Slip it through the mail slot.
Nowhere home. You've taken it in.
What do you think of it?
Actually, I don't even know. I own it digitally. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would get it digitally. But I mean, some people still like to buy CDs.
I'm a
CD man.
I just took my wife's car over. Like, she got a van and I took her car over. And like, I don't have any way to play digital tunes on her radio. So I was looking for a CD on the way here. I was driving erratically, searching through a CD collection.
And I'm actually in the same boat. My vehicle only plays CDs. I can't plug in an iPod. So I'm in the same boat. I'm waiting for that
cassette player.
That gratifying moment where you get to hold the thing in your hand.
That's right.
Know? Yeah.
Hey, man, if you could make it on a cassette, let me know because I don't have the CD player.
Working on the 8-track.
I had a cassette player in my previous car, and I could plug the cassette thing in, the adapter, and plug it into the phone and listen. I listen to sermons and podcasts and music all the time.
No kidding, man.
Is it illegal to wear headphones? I wear headphones.
Yeah, that's illegal.
No, it is not.
I think it's part of distracted driving. What was that noise?
That was a confession.
Was that your background to that sweet music we had earlier?
I was gonna rebut, but I decided that I didn't have any case. So
throw it out on Facebook, Mike, and let us know how it goes.
Just don't answer it while you're driving.
It's a great day to be alive. All right, so let's check out another one in studio. We listened to Waiting All My Life. Tell me a little bit about Come a Long Way.
Come a Long Way. I'm really glad this is landing at this spot, actually, because this song really was birthed out of a kind of moment that we've been talking about where you look back at your life and you reflect on the journey you're on and you realize, oh, it's not a moment in time, but it's an ongoing journey. This song was all about realizing, man, I don't feel completely resolved in life. I don't feel like I've hit every answer and I don't feel like everything is good to go from here on out. But man, when I look back, it's incredible how far I've come with the Lord. And so that's what this song's about.
Awesome. Well, let's dig on that. You're listening to Life from the Path. This is Chris Akers with Come a Long Way.
Outside an endless wonder, reckless and thoughts asunder, the starry ghosts, my only friends. Seasick as stormy seasons upon the wave of reason, of every start that found an end. But we've come a long way, come a long way, we've come a long way, yeah. See the old fade in the hold of your gaze. Come along, come along, oh, come along. Inside an ancient wonder, the sacred buried under collected dust and broken words. Homesick of my vacation from firmamental station between the angels and the birds. Oh, we've come a long way, we've come a long way, we've come a long way, yeah. I see the old fade in the hold of your gaze. Come along, come along, oh, come along. Was I out of tune? Was I out of tune? Was I out of tune before the shore came into view?
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Hey, man, I love that song.
That song offered everything.
You're right. It was very apropos. It was very very relevant to what we were talking about. I liked that.
Yeah, that was neat how that lined up there.
It had a bluesy swoon in there. It had a lady voice.
I was going to say, Mike and I both went, huh?
So we
falsetto happens. We lock eyes and go, well, that's nothing we'll ever be able to
right,
do. All right.
See, this is why we collaborate with people. Yeah. Me and Boomer are like, I like this song. And then all of a sudden, whoo, I'm like, I didn't know that was going to show up. It was awesome.
Out of the list of expectations I had, that was not A, B, or Z.
Dude, I loved it. I like that one a lot.
Oh, thanks so much, guys.
I'm a total sucker for vocals when it comes to listening to songs, to the point, like, I'll have physiological responses where I'll get goosebumps. Totally got goosebumps during that song.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Well
there
done.
There you go.
I can't do it.
I know, right? I'm just like,
I'll sing it. I can do it in my car by myself. You know,
we're always better in the car, but
yeah. Yeah. Oh, exactly. Oh, growing man. In life, I've realized that there is a large set of skills that I don't have versus the small set of skills that I do.
Right.
And this just furthered the chasm between me and being a good singer.
No, that's true. I don't mop a mean floor, and I'm not Chris Hacker.
Right. Seriously. I'll be the guy that, like, I'm doing worship on a Sunday morning, and I'm like, hey, man, this sounds good. I hope Jesus likes this. Not from like, hey, everybody listen to me, but like, I hope Jesus loves this music.
But I'm not feeling terrible about what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go here and I'm just like, oh, I'm going to start being more quiet on some days.
Oh, goodness.
Very cool. Hey, so make sure you pick up that album. Go to chrisacresmusic.com, pick up Nowhere Home, and don't worry, we'll send you out with one more from the album. It's an upbeat. It's called No More Crying. So let me have you tell us a little bit about that so that they're prepared for it when it shows up.
Sure. No More Crying was a bit of a song to myself and also to somebody I knew who was going through a really, really rough time. And I wrote this song essentially for them. And basically, it was my moment of realization that, man, I am so sick of all the tears and the hate and hurt. And, man, I long for something better. And we have the promise. We have the promise in His Word that someday all of that is coming to an end, and there will be no more tears. And so that was absolutely what the song was about, and where the album really had to get to in order to go past the halfway point, I think. So it's kind of the hinge point of the album.
Cool. Cool. So yeah, we'll send you out, with that one, cause it's an upbeat one. I think you'll dig on it. Mike, you got, people need some advice? We got time for maybe one.
Oh, just one, huh?
Maybe one or two. What do you got?
Oh man, hold on. I picked it.
It better be good.
I picked an epic. I gotta get past it now. Something about infection or whatever. And it's really gotten out of hand. There's like 15 paragraphs.
Oh, wow. Man. I realize that I took the duties of that, I think the last couple of weeks, and I can't do it. I can't help but interject myself into them. Like, I comment as they go. I'm not a good,
No, you can't do that, man.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path.
Okay.
I have been in a relationship with a wonderful man for more than a year.
That's great.
Sorry. He has sole custody of his 10-year-old son, parentheses Jordan. Because of our financial circumstances at the time, we moved in with each other right away. An excellent way to start off a relationship.
Wait, after they were married?
No.
I'm guessing no.
No.
I was going to say, that seems like an unnecessary detail. Continue.
Hey, we're trying, you know what I'm saying?
Hello? I'm sorry.
Tough day to be alive.
Yeah.
Because of our financial situation at the time, we moved in with each other right away. Jordan's mom is not in the picture, and unfortunately, I inherited her parenting responsibilities because of it. Jordan is a sweet boy, but I have no emotional attachment to him. To be honest, I'm disappointed every time he walks in the door after school, and I'm forced to stop what I'm doing in order to care for him.
What the heck?
Wow, Life from the Path, I thought I would become more attached to Jordan as time went on, but instead I'm feeling resentful. I'm embarrassed to have made a commitment to this man and his son, and have ended up in this situation. I don't want to break up with the love of my life, but I don't want to sacrifice the next 8 years of my life raising a child who isn't mine. Do you have any advice for me?
No. I can't say anything productive to you.
Okay, now listen, I'm going to say something here, and it's going to sound rough, but there's going to be some truth in it. I just want you to hear it from me, okay?
Okay, yeah.
For the first 3 months, both of my kids were alive. I struggled for an emotional attachment with them, right?
Yep.
Like, and especially the second one, mostly because, like, once you start to love a child, when you hear have another one coming or another child is going to be in the picture, you think, I don't have any more love to give. I love this one very intently, and I've used all the love that I have. I'm a simple person. I'm a simple man. I don't have much to offer, but I've offered it all up to this child, right? And so, when my second daughter was born, I felt that way for about 3 months, and I felt awful about it. I mean, just awful. Like, why can't I do this? And then, just like the Lord always does, he multiplies where I thought division was going to have to be the answer. Where I thought love had to be divided, God just says, I'll bring more.
Right. Yeah.
No worries. I got this covered. And he fixed it, and you couldn't separate me from these children, right? But the reason I bring that up is one, if you feel that way, about new situations, new children, stuff that's fairly fresh to you, don't let it sit so heavy that it ruins you. There's a bit of a lie in there, and there's the bit of you're scared, and there's a bit of, having to give up what you've had for something new, and you're doing it one toe at a time, and that is why you feel that way. And so, just to throw that off the bat, you're not a bad person, you don't dislike the children, keep that in mind. That is not the situation that's going on here. I was really hoping that would be the deal, and my advice would be solid and well-placed. But I've included that because I really felt like a schmuck about that. And I don't want other people to feel that way. And it's a bit embarrassing. People say, you didn't like your kid when they were born? Yeah, here's the deal. It's not as simple as that, but there is some truth there. And a lot of that we'll wrap up with, especially ladies, with some bits of postpartum depression and stuff like that. Yeah. Something new just happened to you.
Right.
And sometimes it doesn't come right off the bat. It's a bit weird, you know? So, this gal's situation is a hair, different. You haven't started off at the greatest of foundations. We're just going to put it that way, for a broad truth. Once again, there's paths to joy that I think that have been created, and you've attempted to take an alternate path. And while I don't think that is your ruination, it's certainly not producing joy at the rate or the guarantee of which I'm used to. And so, as far as I'm concerned, you probably need to find your way out of this thing.
Yeah.
You're not willing to give, right? It sounds simple, and mean-spirited, but the truth of the matter is you're willing to take, from this man, and a big part of his life is his son, and It's not like you're saying, I wish I loved the child. I wish I could do better. I don't understand why I'm not bonding. You're just like, I'm not interested in losing my life to these clowns. And you're blaming the child as if it was his fault or he had some say in it. And so, like, you're just not right. You're not in the right place to handle the role that you've put your hand up for. And so it's going to cause some problems, and it's a bit of a pride thing. My advice is it's time for you to back out. It's just time for you to go. You can try counseling or whatever, but it's counseling is generally trying to get you to where you want to be and having a hard time getting there. You don't want to be there. And so, you probably need to bow out of this thing.
I would agree. I would say, at least by her description, her heart's just not in it, right? Like she's not working through something and needing encouragement and support in working through it. Like she's out.
Yeah.
She's out. She said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to abandon the love of my life. But the truth is like you are, that's slightly dishonest because, if you really loved him, the man has custody of his child. And so, to act like that those two things don't go together that's a false thing. It may be something you want to believe, but it's just not a reality. So I would say for your, for the benefit of this man and his son and yourself, honesty is the best policy here. I think you need to cut that loose.
Yeah, I'm actually constantly amazed at people's ability to try to shine a poor decision as if there was a good reason for it. Where the kingdom of God is the complete opposite. Like you make what appears to be a poor decision for a very good reason every time. It's the means that matter. And here she's trying to sell the ends. Like we moved in together right when we met because of financial reasons. Well, you've described that you've made a shortcut to the ends. Without handling the means correctly.
Right.
Same thing with your relationship with the son. The fact that it appears as if you're staying home and basically being there when the child gets off from school, you've taken the role of a caretaker that you never wanted. You never wanted that. And so you've made concessions and have chosen the ends and skipped the means altogether. And that produces disaster where people that follow Jesus are generally known for their means following, regardless of how the ends turn out, and that's how people know them, right? They tend to make, God-honoring decisions, even when it appears to be to their own peril, and that is obviously not what's happening here. So let's see what Secular's advice is. Secular says, the question was, do you have any advice for me? Secular responds, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. If Jordan's father is really, quotes, the love of your life, you had better accept that he and his son are a package deal and treat the child with love. If you can't manage that, then do them both a favor and bow out of the picture now. Postscript. And because none of this is Jordan's fault, while you're packing, assure him that your leaving has nothing to do with him, only with you. It's the truth, and that way he won't blame himself for something that's not his fault. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a sticky situation. But, I don't know. I can't speak from a heart of understanding where she's coming from. It doesn't take me but 2 minutes to love a kid.
Yeah.
Except for my own. I detest them for 3 months at least.
If I'm being honest, I was actually praying on this last night. I noticed that I'm not reacting in the same way to one of my kids and haven't been for the last 2 or 3 weeks. It's not because I don't love them or anything, but I just don't have the patience for them.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, why am I reacting this way to this child? And I thought, because the child is annoying.
That's the truth. She's doing things that are wrong.
The child is being difficult, she doesn't give anything away. They're all girls, and so I thought to myself, what is my right reaction to that? And my right reaction as a dad is always to press in, right? Is always to make sure my expectations are fair, are reflective of her and her person, who she is. All three of those kids are different. And so it's just, they're not going to act the same way. This particular one is just jazzy. I mean, they're jazzed up. Always got a lot of energy and excitement and completely inappropriate times. You're like, calm down. We're trying to do something here. quit making a bunch of noise, quit jumping around, quit doing all this business. And I thought to myself, how do I celebrate that kid? How do you channel this energy for good? Because the thing that bothers me is you're using it for not good. In ways that, but like the last thing I would want to do is crush that energy when everyone else is Lamesville in my house. Like we're all real flatlined about things. Like no one gets real jazzed about things. And this kid's an excitable one. And I thought, that's awesome. I wish I was more excitable. And so, it was kind of interesting to think back and kind of pray through it. Cause what I was praying was that this feels like it's a me problem. It's not the kid's issue. It's mine. So like, how do I rethink that? And generally the answer has been when that's happened before was, press in and as opposed to focusing on like trying to mold that particular kid to do exactly what you want, like sit back a little bit and like look at who she is, look at what she's doing, look at what her personality is, and celebrate what's not you and then figure out how to actually parent that, as opposed to the other way around. And it was kind of cool. I actually had a good interaction, with that said child today. Because I've been more intentional about kind of interacting with that kid in a way that otherwise respects, who she is without otherwise letting her, you know, terrorize the house. It's been all right.
Yeah. Sometimes we overlook this slightly, and, I'm going to grandstand this thing down to a real minute or two, but like, parenting's it's a tough gig, and I got more liars and pretenders doing the work, than we need. You know what I'm saying? We need a little bit more honesty, a little bit more stuff you're struggling with. Cause here's the deal, like if you can't share that with me truthfully, I'm almost certain that you're not sharing that with God truthfully. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's get to the point. And like, that's an honest and hard thing to say. That thing that I said is an honest and hard thing to say. Like, no one wants to say that junk about their kids. But the truth of the matter is, like, you're gonna struggle with it sometimes, and you're gonna look at them every once in a while and go, I've done this. This kid is awful. And I've done this. It's my job to raise this child right and follow Jesus. And they're a terror. And they're disrespectful. And I don't understand them. and it's honest. You got to look at it. Sometimes you got to laugh. Sometimes you indeed need to cry. And sometimes you need to get on your knees and say, look, I'm steering this boat wrong and I need your help. Please don't let me stand in the way of what you have planned for this child. But my shortcomings, I feel like are bubbling to the top today and I'm noticing them. And now they're sitting on me. As if I've brought them and dressed them in these, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, let's just be honest about that stuff. You know what I'm saying? We're all shooting for the same goal. I want my kids to know Jesus. I don't care if they even like me. To some extent, I do. The truth of the matter is, like, I'm the fifth prize in the row of prizes. The Lord is the prize. The Lord is the thing. And, like, if I'm stumbling on that, and if I'm not presenting a good gospel to my kids, I am failing. I don't care how many cakes I buy or how many Clark bars that they know the existence of. I'm failing, and I don't want to fail there. And so let's be honest about that and find another dad that's willing to help you with that.
Yeah, right on. Right on. All right, I tell you what, let's, Mike, I think we're going to have to cut it off right there.
This is a tepid day to be alive, man.
What happened? No. This is going to shade it. This is going to straighten it out.
Wait, do me a favor. Announce what's going to happen next.
We're going to send you out with No More Crying by Chris Akers.
Great day to be alive.
Okay, good. That straightened that out. Hey, big thanks to Chris for coming in the studio and hanging out with us.
Thanks,
always
guys.
A pleasure to have him. Make sure you go dig on that album. Go to chrisakersmusic.com. You can listen to, purchase the music. You can spin it on Spotify. And then maybe down the road, physical CD action. We'll see what happens. Dig on that. Hook up with them on social media and stuff. Let them know you love the album. And like, wherever you pick it up, if there's a way to, like, leave reviews or otherwise interact with what Chris is doing, please do that.
Do it.
It gives him a chance to be able to see how people are reacting to his music. And that's always a cool thing as an artist to be able to see that. And it's what's cool. I hate to talk over soon. But like we had a really cool experience at church this week. We had everybody kind of had to talk about some takeaways they had from the book of Philippians, and like it was really cool to see so many people get so many different things. Sometimes even within the same section of scripture, and so like things you didn't know whether were intended or not, but otherwise that God used for good. Our art is kind of that same thing. Sometimes it's really a surprise to see what people hear and how they interact with what you're doing. So make sure you do that with Chris. Shoot him an email, find him on social media, or like leave reviews and stuff wherever you get those tunes. So big thanks to Chris. Go pick up that album, chrisakersmusic.com. We will see you, next week. Hey, December's gonna be cool. We have a author coming in. I'll share more about that, that book next week. And, so we'll do that. Lots of cool stuff on Life from the Path. Between now and next week, check out the website for clips from the show. And in the meantime, please be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Life from the Path.